Hello, and welcome to the Sitlifering Report. Today, we have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about what is possible for next year. We're going to talk about things that most people probably won't hear. What am I saying? There are a lot of news stories out there that we have to cover today. There is a lot of foreboding of things that may happen that are horrible next year. And what am I talking about? Things that could start as early as January 20th. Yes, I'm talking about the inauguration. Are you ready for what's going to happen? Those are things that actually need to be discussed. If you're interested today in joining the show, please feel free to call in area code 319-527-6706 if you want to join in and talk about what you think will happen next year. But we're going to start the show with a little devotions, and then we'll get going. So I'm going to share with you. Usually I play a tape of what devotions that I've done and shared, and I want to share with you my devotions this morning as we get going. Today, one of the last days that's going to be in my book on Exodus, a devotional book that'll be coming out soon. I read Exodus 40, verses 1 to 15. Now, I'm not going to read all of them, but let me give you a little background. In the book of Exodus, at this point, Moses has been given the instructions on how to build the tabernacle by God. And he has handed, God picked two people to be in charge of all this. Not two people to do all the work, but two people to be in charge. So Moses gave the task, the directions to those two people. And, you know, there's interesting things behind this. They needed donations of gold and silver and bronze and fabric and purples and reds. And an amazing amount of stuff was required. Now, these people had been slaves. And interesting part here is that they had someone assigned to do inventory as stuff was being given, and it wasn't very long after stuff started being donated that they had to say, you can't give anymore. We can't use this. So stuff that went over and beyond, they ended up giving back. If they weren't going to use it, they gave it back. Now, I find that incredibly honorable, maybe something that churches should live by. Now, this is interesting, because in Exodus 40, they have already completed the work. They got in Exodus 39, they talk about having the work delivered, and it's completely done. But when you get to Exodus 40, I'm just going to read you the first few verses. It says, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, on the first day of the first month, shall you set up the tabernacle of the tent of congregation." Now, Moses, I want you to think about this. Moses had the tent delivered, the tabernacle and everything delivered. It was completed. And he didn't do anything, is what some people might be saying. He had all this work done, but it was all the work that God had requested, but he did not do anything with it. Why? Because he was waiting on God. So I put it like this. Moses had everything requested and completed. It's like being an adult on Christmas morning and all the presents are sitting under the tree. You can't wait to use them. Men who get a new tool, they're excited. They have their eyes sparkling, thinking of how they'll use that particular tool. They start to create reasons to go to their work area and do something. Now, women who get something they can use, you know, they might be like this, but I know the men are. But Moses was better than this. His anticipation had breaks. He waited on putting the tabernacle together until God said, go. So here's the interesting thing. Matthew Henry points out that it is better when God goes before you. He points to Psalm 37:23, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. When we do wait on God, things turn out better. Most of us are not good at waiting, but Moses' patience here gave us another lesson. God told Moses to set the tabernacle up on the first day of the year. God was setting the Israel ups to do better the next year. Starting the new year with a resolution is often considered foolish because many people don't keep their promises to themselves. But imagine setting aside something to do on the new year that will make your life better for God. Something you start on January 1st, what will it be? I'm not talking about a resolution. It's something you do. That says you're going to live a better life for Jesus. Shouldn't that be the goal of every Christian on December 1st? So what are you planning to do tomorrow to make your life better? That was my devotions this morning. And, you know, today being December 31st and tomorrow being January 1st, I found that fascinating. I don't remember having read that before. I was kind of surprised. So let me get into my concerns for next year. In the past couple of years, I have written my thoughts. What is coming down the road? I'm hesitant to write them down this year. I'm holding out for hope. And I'll be point blank. My hope is that Trump remains president. I have no problem admitting that. Here's the what if. If Biden becomes president, what does that mean? Now, I've been talking with some top-notch national security experts. And we didn't bring this topic up intentionally. It's just small conversations between me and them individually. And they're scared. What are they scared of? They're not scared of really anything, but what does a Biden presidency mean? That's what we're scared of. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of the things that Biden has said he is going to do and how anti-American they are. I'm not saying they are anything but evil. Now, that's my point. His promises are full of evil intent. Why do I say that? Well, one of his goals is to stop putting Americans first. Okay. So you're going to be the president of a country and you don't want your country to be first. You're going to put everybody in line before them? What's your reasoning behind that? Are you getting some kind of kickback if you let somebody else in front of you? Well, remember, Biden made his millions by doing that kind of thing while he was vice president and senator before that. Think about that. If you don't believe me, you can go look up several articles by reputable sources that will prove this. This is not something I'm looking forward to if it's going to happen. Here's the big thing that bothers me the most is his statements on the border, on national security. You may be unaware of some of the things Trump has done quietly. It's hard for him to do anything quietly. I'll admit that. But some of the things he has done quietly have to do with our southern border. And the only reason I'm slightly aware of them is because of good men like Todd Bensman. Now, Todd Bensman with the Center of Immigration Studies has told us about some of the intricate methods and things that have been instituted under the Trump presidency to make America safer. Why? Because he puts America first. What he's promising and delivering is hope. It's protection of you because he believes in his country. Now, we have a man coming in to be president who has already talked about his vice president being the president. And this is where things get doubly scary. I have been saying this since before Biden won that he will not be president. His vice president will. If Biden is president, it will not last a month because his dementia will show to even the most simple person who meets him. And when I say most simple person, I'm saying whoever is assigned to wash dishes, whoever is assigned to take out the garbage. These are probably going to be young military men. I'm not saying they're unintelligent. I'm saying that their job is not to recognize these things, but they're going to see it. Here we have a man who has been kept in his basement by his wife for months. And the Democratic Party put him up as the best they had. And then they pulled in Kamala Harris to take the reins from him the second he gets in office. What has Kamala Harris promised? She has promised a relationship with Planned Parenthood. What does she promise concerning our border? She plans to open it. If it's up to her and it's allowed by our Congress, she's going to totally open the borders. There will be no restrictions, no monitoring. Drugs and everything will go back and forth. There'll be no stopping of drug trade as well. This is the evil inherent within this possible presidency. Scary. Now, there is an article out there today by MRC TV. That's Media Research Center we're talking about. P. Gardner Goldsmith wrote, Planned Parenthood exec gloats. They're working closely with Biden team, suggesting pro-abortion government hires. This came out the 29th. Pro-life Americans have been concerned about potentially cozy relationship between the president-elect Biden team and abortion promoter Planned Parenthood. And two new reports appear to confirm that those fears were justified. As Daily Wire's Emily Zanotti writes, the American branch of that international abortion monster is getting out word that it has a powerful friend in supposedly Catholic Biden and is working hard to populate any future Biden administration with pro-abortion hires. They don't have to work any harder. They already have it in Kamala Harris. Abortion conglomerate Planned Parenthood is playing a crucial role in paving the way for a potential Joe Biden presidential administration, reportedly helping the Democrat transition team identify and hire White House staffers. The staffing push could have a profound effect on not only legislation, but also on executive branch policy. And one of the key areas where Planned Parenthood executives likely would anticipate a change in said policy would be the reversal of President Trump's 2019 chess move block of Planned Parenthood receiving what are called Title 10 family planning funds. Okay, why would you give Title 10 family planning funds to a group that kills children? That is contrary. I mean, that's their concept of planning is removing what they consider an objection, a piece of a foreign entity within a person. Foreign entity. If it's a foreign entity, that means it has a life of its own? Oh, so it's murder is what they're saying. Yes, that's what they're saying. Quote, Planned Parenthood is also likely petitioning to restore their access to the Title X family planning program. The group voluntarily left the Title X program after the Trump administration issued a new edict banning organizations receiving Title X grants from providing or referring patients for abortion, except in extreme cases. Planned Parenthood was given the option to reorganize how they provide services, but they chose instead to drop their involvement with the Title X program. Yeah. Zanotti refers to recent Newsweek interview with PP Planned Parenthood president Alexis McGill Johnson, in which Johnson boasts about the vast sums that her abortion organization showered on the Biden race. and discusses what she expects Planned Parenthood to reap in return. Planned Parenthood President Alexis McGill Johnson told Newsweek that the abortion rights organization is looking to get a return on its investment after splashing out around $45 million to help the Joe Biden-Kamala Harris ticket get elected. They're spending this money because of Kamala Harris, not because of Joe Dementia. The group spent a whopping $10 million. Wait a minute. If they have $10 million to burn, do they need any federal funds? Absolutely not. Big organization. They don't need the money. They have $10 million to burn. Oh, and if you think they only supported Planned Parenthood's number one person, Kamala Harris, take a look at all the other political candidates they endorsed and supported financially. They had $10 million to burn. And it doesn't even hurt their profits off the murder of babies. Think about that. They're bragging that this is what's going to happen. I'm disgusted and I'm scared about this possible future. This is one of the things that will happen with a Biden presidency. Planned Parenthood is coming in. Yeah, they're going to kill more babies. Yes. The other organization that's coming in, the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, they have been there and have stayed from Obama's day. They were given an open door. And during Trump's time, they have not all left. There's a good number still high in high positions in various positions throughout the military and throughout political entities and D.C. These are easy things to verify. You can simply look through family relationships. You can look through a whole bunch of things. Say it's easy to verify. Because we know who started the Muslim Brotherhood here. It's documented. Their grandchildren have been in Obama's presidency. They served as staff. Now, are their children? Yes, and you're starting to see some of these things. You'll see all these little involvement. They're planning to have a new involvement, a new level of involvement beyond what you expect in Biden's presidency. The, quote, ban on Muslims is going to be lifted. There is no ban on Muslims. Keep that in mind. The only countries that were banned are countries that have no way that they can be verified, anybody can be verified as to who they claim they are. That's the only countries that are banned. And there are two countries that were banned that are not Muslim. So there's no justification whatsoever for what their claim is. And then we get going. So what do they want to bring here? What they were saying by calling this a Muslim ban is they want to be able to bring jihadis into the United States and let them become active. Because if you don't verify people, you don't check them, then they can wreak havoc. Sadly, our current administration still has not understood one thing. That in order to do your best and by immigration, you cannot accept more people than you can verify. We're getting better at this. President Trump helped set up a central immigration verification area group. All they do, this group does, is verify people coming from other countries that they are who they claim to be, that they are safe to be in America. Now, outstanding group. Now, Todd Benzman has been on, and we've talked about how they've caught Chinese spies simply by checking their social media. There's some other things that you just sit there and marvel at about how dangerous people can be. But these measures that have been put into place by President Trump are in danger of being removed simply because they were started by President Trump. Even though the whole point of the organization is to make America safe, is to put America up as job one as number one for the country. They are, I mean, this is the thing that bothers me, that all these things are in danger, that are good for America, are in danger of being ended simply because Kamala Harris and Biden, I will say Kamala Harris will be president. The hateful actions of this woman and Joe Dementia will destroy, intentionally destroy anything they think that Trump has touched. Now, let's see. What did the number one thing that I can say that we experienced, one of the best things that this country experienced in 2020, was an incredible reduction in unemployment. Such an incredible reduction that it had never happened before. What? And we're talking about the lowest in history unemployment for blacks, the lowest unemployment in history for Hispanics and Asians. And if you look at those figures, they call this man a racist, yet he makes it possible for them to get people to get jobs. This is deceitful. This is the thing people don't want you to know. They don't want the truth out. Think about the other things that are going to happen here. They're going to make it possible for this country to be destroyed from within. That is the biggest scare. They've already worked on our elections. I live in New York State. I'm questioning whether any of the results in New York State were accurate. I don't know why anybody should trust them. Any machine that was run by Dominion, any person who ran for office and lost, all of them in every state run with a Dominion machine should, I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, what, you should be fighting. If you lost and you know the Dominion machines are corrupt, wherever they were used, you should be fighting. How do I know they're accurate? Pennsylvania, it just was verified yesterday that Pennsylvania, the votes had more vote. They had X amount of voters, and they had a large number of votes over the amount of voters. But wait a minute. How do you do that? Do some people get extra votes? In a weighted voting system, this happens. This is what many great minds have been talking about now for about 2 months, that a weighted voting system was used. How is this even possible? How did they not notice this at the end of the night? I have a lot of questions with this. How is that possible? I think about the things we had to do when I was an election inspector and an election coordinator to verify that the amount of votes given equaled the amount of votes, cast. So you could add up X amount of votes for Joe, X amount of votes for Donald, X amount of votes for this person, that person. And at the end of the night, and you're looking about all those, you have to add them up. And if they were over the amount, something was seriously wrong. I'll tell you, I never saw that. Not once. And the only way that can happen is through corrupt systems. Somebody is breaking the election system. Did that happen in New York State? I honestly believe it did. I don't trust New York State. I don't trust King Andy. We don't have a governor. We have a king. He believes he's a lawmaker. But again, I want to stay on the topic of what will happen. If President Trump is put back into office, here's my prediction. They're going to try and shut us down. On that day, on January 20th, if President Trump does not step down, I believe that they will do everything in their power, these Democrat corrupt kings of states, will do everything in their power to create some form of war. Now, what am I saying? When the election happened, There were actual plans that had been discovered that should Donald Trump have won that night, there were plans to riot in the streets. When I went to bed, Donald Trump had won. There was no way he was going to lose. I was happy. I wake up in the morning, somewhere between 3 and 4 a.m., Dominion machines were corrupted, and extra votes were given to Biden in the amounts of millions. That is something that is being verified daily. So the one thing I want for my new year, the one thing I've wanted for Christmas, is a way to prevent these stupid electronic machines from being used again. I want a simple system that allows each ballot to be counted, if only by hand. I want that. Why? Because I want to be able to trust my vote counts. And if we don't have that, we have no national security. If we don't fight for that now, we don't fight for the sanctity of the vote. That's what people are missing. They think this is a Trump or Biden fight. Tell those fools, They think this is all about Trump or Biden. It's all about the sanctity of the vote. This is much bigger. This is far bigger. My fight for the sanctity of the vote, my concerns for accuracy of the vote, that to me, if I want anything this January, I don't want it next month. I want it today. I want us to be able to say that no matter where a vote is held in this country, that it is a sacred, and to Americans, it could be considered holy because the concept of voting is important beyond our description. It is about everything an American is, the ability to vote, the importance of voting, the choice to vote, the choice not to. Those are American traits. I wish I could tell every American that you're not an American who chooses not to vote because you choose not to participate in government. That's what the American government's all about. But again, we are a government that gives you choices. I don't want to see things fall apart as I think they may on January 20th. We have a lot of sadness coming down the road if Biden takes over and then Kamala Harris replaces him, as I predict. You're hearing it here. You probably heard it on many other stations, but it will happen if Biden gets in. Nancy Pelosi has guaranteed it. It's a promise. Are you ready for that? How many people would have voted for Kamala Harris? She couldn't even she didn't win the primary against a guy with dementia. That tells you something. It should tell you a lot. Now, what do you think is going to happen with COVID-19? Anybody? I mean, it's up to you. If you want to call in and comment, please do. Again, the area code 319-527-6706. If you call in, just press 1 and I'll know that you're interested in talking. This important information is something that must get out. What do you think is going to happen? Why do I think it's important? Because right now there are places that are threatening their employees, saying they can make you take a vaccine. They can force you to take a vaccine. Back on December 19th, lawyers were arguing employers can legally require COVID-19 vaccinations. This is an article by Jim Hoft on the Gateway Pundit. He wrote, Washington state attorney says employers can force employees to take the COVID vaccine. It is more likely a child or a young adult dies by drowning than COVID. But this is what the leftists are pushing. think about that. The KREM2 report says, it's a simple question. Can my employer require me to get a coronavirus vaccine? While the news is full of pictures of happy and relieved nurses, doctors, and other frontline medical workers getting the first round of Pfizer vaccine this week, various polls suggest not everybody is on board, even including people in healthcare. The question is not totally settled yet because the vaccine has not been generally available, said Everett attorney Todd Nichols, who handles the employment cases. But the consensus in the employment law community is that the employer can require a vaccination. Nichols said employers can require drivers of its vehicles to wear seatbelts, and schools require vaccines. For example, it's legal for an employee to hire non-smokers, said Nichols. Think about this. Yes, you can require that. I am just... I have to admit, I am mind blown at the concept that someone could require you to have a vaccination. We've had people fighting getting the polio vaccine and all these other vaccines. You know, there's questions about how good that is or how bad that is. I've read a lot on both sides. It's, you know, it's things that we should be thinking about. There's another article out there by Breitbart with this vaccination issue. Up to half of healthcare workers in parts of California refuse coronavirus vaccine. This one's by Joel B. Pollack on December 31st today. Up to half of healthcare workers in some parts of California are refusing to take the coronavirus vaccine despite scientific evidence that it's, quote, safe, leading to a potential surplus of doses and renewed questions about the system for allocating them. At St. Elizabeth Community Hospital in Tehama County, fewer than half of the 700 hospital workers eligible for the vaccine were willing to take the shot when it was first offered. At Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in Missions Hill, one in five frontline nurses and doctors have declined the shot, roughly 20% to 40% of LA County's frontline workers who were offered the vaccine did the same, according to county public health officials. So many frontline workers in Riverside County have refused the vaccine, an estimated 50%, that hospitals and public officials met to strategize how best to distribute the unused doses. The extent to which, are you catching this? Unused doses? They are saying it should be mandatory, and so many people are refusing to get the vaccine that they have a crap load of vaccine to give away because people are not getting it. I don't see the purpose in getting a vaccination. I will be one of those refusing. My reasoning is that if you can go home with an illness and in a week be fine, why do you need a vaccination? That's my simple question. My son got COVID-19. He went home for about a week. He lost his sense of taste and smell for a while. He had a little fever here and there. Drank plenty of fluids, came back to work the following week. It's 7 to 10 days, and he was back at work. My sister got this, recently recovered. She was out for, 10 days. She's ready to go back to work, only she got better during Christmas vacation. Now, does she have to test? No, because when you don't have symptoms, you're not contagious. Again, why are people wearing masks when you know this stuff? Why are doctors allowing unscientific things to rule? Horrible thing that I've seen happen this entire thing, this entire COVID lockdown. We have had unscientific rulings that have destroyed us. Why do I say that? There is so much evil in respect to what is happening in this country, where doctors' offices are requiring you to wear masks, yet they know that for healthy people to wear masks, it's unhealthy. CDC has written stuff on this. Who has written stuff on this, recommending that healthy people not wear masks? But all of a sudden, when COVID-19 started, They were still saying these things that weren't for healthy people wearing masks, it's unhealthy. But when politicians started deciding they should make the rules, they should be the ones to tell people what's healthy and what's not. We call that tyrannical ruling. These things were changed. Let's talk about fake news and how evil it is and how destructive it is. Now, Breitbart does something called Nolte's Breitbart 2020 Fake Awards. Now, John Nolte calls this the fourth annual Breitbart News Awards for Fake News. So the first winner is 2020's Best Hitler Impersonation Award. Okay, here we go. New York Times normalizes racist eugenics supported by woke doctors. This came out December 18th. When it comes to deciding who will receive the coronavirus vaccine, the far-left New York Times is normalizing the idea that skin color is more important than need, risk, and vulnerability. Yes, the New York Times is perfectly capable of arguing that it's okay to sacrifice your grandparents on the altar of social justice. Feel free to accuse me of hyperbole, says Nolte. But the truth is this truth. And the truth is that not since Nazi Germany have we seen something like what the New York Times is guilty of, which is an establishment news organization openly normalizing the idea of choosing who lives and who dies, not on need, but on race and skin color. Wither the Hippocratic Oath. An article published by the Times this month examined the dilemma of the Trump vaccine. The elderly versus essential workers. Who should get the coronavirus first? The headline read, which is perfectly legitimate and moral dilemma for a newspaper to look into. We can't vaccinate everyone once, so who gets it and why? Who gets first and why? So Nolte says, so dummy me, because I sometimes forget how far gone the media are, how morally illiterate the children who run organizations such as the Times are. Nolte says he's expecting a thoughtful debate over who is more at risk and how tough decisions sometimes have to be made. He says he's even willing to accept a look at something like, well, if we vaccinate grandma and not Dr. Happy dies or gets sick, many more people might die with Dr. Happy out of action. Nolte says, hey, I'm an adult. I get nuances and thinking out loud. I can handle that. I'll tell you what I didn't expect, he says. I didn't expect, Nolte says, to see the New York Times normalize the openly racist practice of eugenics. Nolte says he's not going to quote fully below what the New York Times published as an acceptable line of thought. And since you may not believe him, you can look for himself, for yourself, he says. He's not making any up, nor is he talking out of context. The only thing he's adding is the bold emphasis. Quote, this is from the New York Times. Harold Schmidt, an expert in ethics and health policy at the University of Pennsylvania, said that it is reasonable to put essential workers ahead of older adults, given their risk, and that they are disproportionately minorities. Elderly are disproportionately minorities? Doesn't that depend on where you live? Given their risk and that they are disproportionately minorities, older people are whiter, Dr. Schmidt said. Society is structured in a way that enables them to live longer. Instead of giving additional health benefits to those who are already had more of them, we can start to level the playing field a bit. Oh, wait, this just sounds, yeah, there's no logic. It's very, very racist, and the New York Times is allowed to say those things. Yeah. 2020's second best Hitler impersonation went to the Washington Post. They depicted Republican collaborators as rats, Nazi-style propaganda. This was back in, again, early December 21. In Washington Post cartoon published on Sunday, Ann Talness, an editorial cartoonist of the Post, depicted Republicans who collaborated with the president in contesting the 2020 election as gruesome rats. Yes, this is what they're doing, people. This is called propaganda machine. And let's see, we have 2020's Jew Hoding Homophobe says what award? We have the 2020's second best kissing future employer, Jeff Zucker's ass award. We have Eunuch and Rachel Maddow's glasses award. 2020's have you, I can't read that one. We have losing to CNN award. Now that's funny. Nolte, Fox News has been losing to CNN since botched election night coverage. Oh, yes. Fox News is losing to far left CNN. In the meantime, organizations like One America Now, One America News are growing leaps and bounds. Newsmax, growing leaps and bounds. Even here, we should be growing leaps and bounds because nobody can get the truth from stations that like to lie to people. Wow. Next up, yeah, there's a lot of news stories out there. A lot. I want to talk about some of the stuff I've been reading about from Sweden. And I don't have my news organized like I usually do, so we'll just get into it. This one says is from Sweden, because direct source from there, and it says the SAMNYTT, taxpayers' note for the Swedish Migration Agency scandal settlement, over a quarter of a billion. Now, they have been talking about how they've been paying for services in respect to migration. Some people will call these people refugees. They refer to this as funding refugee resettlement. In Sweden, it's called the organization that takes care of all these people is called the Swedish Migration Agency. It's important you understand that. This organization has dealt with in 2015 almost 140,000 migrants crossed. So in 2015, almost 140,000 migrants crossed the Swedish border on one board that year. It was fully transformed into the seller's market. In contrast to care, nursing, and other welfare services aimed at Swedes, there's no budget ceiling for what immigration may cost, no maximum price tag for what Swedish Migration Agency may pay for. Keep that in mind. One player who in 2015 was particularly successful in exploiting the asylum chaos was Tobias Lindfors, main owner of Pete Hasbad, where many had to settle for short-term contracts extended as needed, compensation only for places with occupancy. Lindfors managed to negotiate multi-year contracts and also paid for empty places. The latter could prove particularly profitable as the facility during the years it has been in operation, as an asylum resident has never even been present. So they're paying. They're going broke. Sweden is going broke paying for this stuff. Part of the reason is some of the people here are charging them, overcharging them, ridiculously so. So these are things to think about. Again, Sweden has a socialist government. So they're having trouble dealing with the amount of migration because of that. My next news story is from France. There, a 30-year-old man was sentenced to 6 months in prison, that was on the 21st, for the sexual assault of a schoolgirl in Saint-Nazaire. Now, this 30-year-old man is a Muslim migrant, from Afghanistan. We'll get back into that. 30-year-old man was sentenced to 6 months on Monday, December 21st, 2020. This is by Julien Boulou, for the sexual assault of a schoolgirl in Saint-Nazaire. The facts go back to the afternoon on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, on the outskirts of Place Poincaré. The 15-year-old victim was walking home after school when she was accosted by two men. One of them, an alcoholic, grabbed her by the arm before tearing off his mask. He kissed her a dozen times on the side of the face before licking her cheek. While struggling, the teenager was able to free herself from the grip before being taken in by passers-by who called the police. The suspect was quickly apprehended. The man of Afghan nationality, father of family, made confused remarks during his custody, denying any sexual act. Because his confused remarks are in respect to in Sharia, she's non-Muslim. She's not wearing a hijab, so he's thinking he did nothing wrong. And this is what's going on. They are confused. They don't understand why they're in trouble, especially if they don't speak the language. This is what is allowable under Sharia. And yet, in these countries, such as France and Germany and England, they consider these people mentally ill because they don't understand basic premises. They don't understand they've been taught the opposite. So they call them mentally ill. So everybody who does something contrary and doesn't agree with them is now mentally ill? Is that how we should treat people who commit crimes as mentally ill? And this is the stuff that is happening throughout Europe. It's happening here too. It's sad. It is very, very sad. Now, I will read one more thing from the States. John Guandolo is a former FBI agent, and I've actually been talking to him about the Nashville bombing. I don't know if you're paying attention to the bombing. I have read everything I could find on it. I have looked at, literally, it feels like hundreds of pictures of it, videos. I have lots of questions. I've shared them, my concerns. But John Guandolo has a different take than anybody else I have heard on this. He writes, this is by John Guandolo. You can find it from understandingthethreat.com. You go to the blog and you'll find UTT's initial assessment of Nashville bombing situation. At 6:30 a.m. Central Standard Time on Christmas Day, a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device exploded in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, damaging/destroying over 40 businesses and injuring at least 8 people. The bomb was carried in a recreation vehicle, and the remains of Anthony Quinn Warner, who is the owner of the RV, were found in the wreckage of the vehicle. At the center of the blast radius is an AT&T transmission facility, and the blast directly affected communications to a larger area extending to several states around Tennessee, including 911 service in the Nashville area. Under intelligence, it says the attack occurred on Christmas after the global Islamic movement actors called for Christmas Day attacks in the West. The U.S. Muslim Brotherhood has been recruiting clean faces, people they believe do not look Muslim, for all levels of their operations. So those who are quick to dismiss this bombing as non-jihadi attack may be jumping to an incorrect conclusion, he writes. There is information that Nashville's AT&T site here is linked to ongoing investigation into Dominion, whose voting machines and software are tied to fraudulent votes and foreign interference in the 2020 presidential election. UTT is running these leads down and will publish a more detailed account when they have more information on that topic. Nashville has a high concentration of jihadi and communist leaders and organizations, all of whom have been supported for years by Nashville's elected law enforcement and civic leaders. These hostile movements have been given top cover by both Democrats and Republicans in Tennessee over the years. Jihadis work directly with communist Black Lives Matter and Antifa, often serve in leadership posts in these organizations. The FBI is addressing the bombing as a criminal matter and will, as it has in all cases, fail to view it from a strategic perspective, which will necessarily cause them to mishandle their entire case. The FBI has no understanding of the communist jihadi threats at a micro or macro level, and therefore is grossly ill-equipped to offer a productive response. John Guandolo continues in his assessment. Now, here's the part that surprised me. He writes, UTT's initial assessment with the information that they now have is that the Christmas Day bombing in Nashville was a planned operation executed by Antifa as a distraction operation to cripple communications node to test local state response. The operation sends several signals because this is the first and foremost an information war. A few of these messages are, one, Christians, we don't respect you and we'll come at you one of your high holy days. Two, citizens, your government can't protect you. Three, police, You're defenseless and incapable of protecting your community. This event takes the eye of the public off the voter fraud of the 2020 presidential election and gives Antifa witting allies in the media's large story to keep in the headlines and dampen a real discussion of massive nationwide voter fraud. UTT assesses FBI and related investigating agencies will deem Anthony Quinn Warner as a mentally ill loner with no connections to terrorist groups and close the case, missing the forest for the trees once again. My discussions with John Guandolo have been interesting. I have no understanding and knowledge of this area. I would like to have some. I don't know how to do that. I want more knowledge in this area. But I have some real difficulties looking at the pictures, seeing things not seeing things I would expect to see. I just don't have the knowledge to say, you know, anything conclusively, and I wish I did. But these are the important facts to think about, and his conclusion, I think, is very, very interesting. I'm going on to my next story here, and let me just get that up. Yes, I did not want to forget this one. This one makes me laugh. I don't know if you pay attention to some of the incredible stupid things that are being said, but there are people out there who are good at saying things that just make you laugh and sit there wondering, how do they get away with saying this stuff? Well, on December 20th, a senior Nation of Islam official, Ismail Muhammad, stated the coronavirus vaccine is part of a plot to kill off blacks, and Jews receive less harmful version of the flu vaccine than non-Jews. Yeah. I would call that hate speech. Memory.org or memorytv.org. You can use either one. It's Middle East Media Research Institute. And if you have extra money flowing around, this is an excellent, excellent, outstanding organization to throw your money at. Let me read this as it states. In December 2020, Ismail Muhammad, the national assistant to Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, delivered a series of sermons titled America's Wicked Plan, in which he warned against the COVID-19 vaccines. On December 6th, he suggested that Jews received a less harmful version of the flu vaccine than non-Jews. On December 20th, Muhammad said that there is a plot to kill black people because they are destined to inherit rulership of the world. Muhammad referred to those people who say they are Jews as the synagogue of Satan. Really? Synagogue of Satan? I don't remember reading that one. In addition, Muhammad said that Caucasian people were engineered by a man named Yaqub, who used a DNA. He's saying these things. The real Muhammad didn't say these things. It's only this guy, Ismail Muhammad, who's saying these things. If he had half a brain, Ismail Muhammad had half a brain, he would know that the Muhammad he's talking about, the Muhammad he follows, that created Islam, was a white dude who had black slaves, and he traded two black slaves for one white one. So whenever I hear of Nation of Islam people, I think of stupid people. Why do I say that? Well, when you don't realize and you start saying that your Nation of Islam is, you know, making black people great and stuff like that, you're following a guy who owned black slaves and considered black slaves half the value of a white slave. He based everything on race, just like you are as Nation of Islam people. And, you know, not too bright, not too bright. It's a sad, sorry comment on their ability to use brain power. But yeah. My next article comes from the Daily Mail. Feared terrorist leader who is believed to have orchestrated the Bali bombings reveals sick web of secret jihadi fundraising, posing as charity boxes in normal supermarkets. This comes, again, from Daily Mail. It's written by the Australian Associated Press, and it came out on December 27th. It states, after 18 years on the run, an Indonesian terrorist leader who orchestrated the Bali bombings has revealed new secrets after his arrest. Charity boxes and food stalls and mini marks have been helping to fund radical causes, and police believe there could be up to 6,000 active members of Jamaah Islamia in Indonesia. JI is the Al-Qaeda link group which planned and orchestrated the devastating 2002 Bali nightclub bombing, which killed 202 people, as well as a string of other bombings in Indonesia. Indonesia police have revealed that more than 20,000 charity boxes placed in food stalls have been used to fund the shady terror group's operation. The boxes have been used to collect cash in 20 regions of Indonesia across Java and Sumatra. And the food stall owners had no idea the money was going to a terror group. Yeah, I could probably give you a bridge, a piece of a bridge, if you believe all of that. How could you not know, right? The arrest in November of Aris Sumarsona, known as Zulkarnain, has thrown a new spotlight on JI and its contemporary incarnation. In recent years, analysts believed JI's influence and membership had waned and that it no longer remained a potent threat in the region. Think about that. No longer a potent threat, and they're using a crap load of charity boxes to get thousands of dollars to support their call to kill non-Muslims, which is what jihad is. My next article comes out of Kuwait. This one is a surprise. Came out December 26th. It's from Ashark al-Assad. Kuwait thwarts possible ISIS terror attack on New Year's Eve, December 26th, 2020. This came out. Kuwait's security services have thwarted a possible ISIS terror attack targeting compounds and places of worship on New Year's Eve. The government decided to close the places of worship, ban gatherings during the celebration of religious holidays in public areas starting December 24th. Although it linked the decision to the preventative measures applied to limit the spread of coronavirus, it came amid news of a raised security alert after exposing the ISIS cell. Six young Kuwaitis have been arrested for contacting the terror organization, sources said, adding that it recruited them through a famous online game. Al-Qabas newspaper reported that the Ministry of Interior's investigations with a juvenile cell revealed that its main operator was the son of a former member of the National Assembly. Apparently, he had been the first to be contacted and enrolled by ISIS members. It noted the young boy recruited the rest of his comrades and favor of the extremist organization, the newspaper noted, adding that they were asked to target compounds, mosques on New Year's Eve. Police confiscated firearms, computers that contained chats, and coordinated schemes to carry out terror attacks in the juvenile's possession. The Interior Ministry deployed patrols of highly equipped special forces units inside residential complexes, shopping malls, and in a step aimed at imposing discipline and observing the law. This is not the first time that ISIS targeted Kuwait. In 2015, the terror organization carried out a suicide attack against a mosque in Al Sabah area in the capital, killing 27 and injuring 227 on June 2015. So I've been watching some of these things and keeping up, and you just sit here like, oh, you don't hear about these attacks against Islamic countries. When the Islamic country stands up to terrorism, you start to think of and hear more. Here's another terror attack that was foiled. This is with Russia. This one is a little surprising. It came from DW.com. Russian agents foil Islamic State terror attack. Kremlin security services say it thwarted a plan to carry out an attack on the country's southern republic of Dagestan. The FSB found weapons, a large amount of ammunition, and an explosive device. Russia's Federal Security Service, FSB, said Saturday it had prevented an attack by terror group with its links to the Islamic State armed group. The FSB said it had arrested four people who were set to carry out the offensive in the troubled Southern Republic of Dagestan. Members of the group planned to detonate an explosive close to an administrative building belonging to security services, followed by an armed attack against an interior ministry employees in the city of Makhachkala, the FSB said in a statement. As well as arresting four members of the International Islamic State terror group, investigators found firearms and bladed weapons, a large amount of ammunition, and an explosive device, the FSB statement continued. The security service also uncovered mobile phones, cell phones, containing exchanges with organizers located abroad. Earlier this month, the police killed two attackers targeting security services in the Republic of Chechnya, which borders Dagestan. Six people were also killed during an October counterterrorism operation in the Chechen group Grozny, including two security force members. Russia territories in the region between the Black and Caspian Seas have been disputed for centuries. The most recent conflict in Chechnya occurred over 2 years in the 1990s and 2000s, when the Soviet Union disintegrating, Chechen separatists declared independence. War broke out in 1994, and after 2 years of fighting, Russian forces withdrew from the region. Fighting resumed less than 3 years later, resulting in a large number of casualties on both sides. And yet ISIS is getting their way and getting involved. It's interesting. I mean, I had a lot of people comment on this. It's amazing that the Russians didn't kill them. The point is, again, they stopped it. PalWatch. Now, I don't know if you're aware of what PalWatch does, but Palestinian Media Watch. It's called PALWATCH.org. Outstanding organization. Again, if you have extra funds around and you can afford to support them, please do. This is by Itamar Marcus and Jean-Jacques Zilberdick. Came out December 27th. To a top PA religious official, prohibits women from traveling without a male relative. I shared this on LinkedIn. And one of the guys wrote, yeah, let's see you try that one with your wife. Yeah, share that one. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I shared this with my girlfriend. She's like, I don't think so. Here we go. The article says this. Although PA, Palestinian Authority, likes to present itself as a secular authority, its religious leaders use the official PA TV station to demand a male-dominated society in which women must be obedient to their husbands as part of the obligation under Islam. The PA's Grand Mufti, who was appointed by PA Chairman Abbas himself, was asked on weekly TV program if a man's wife is allowed to travel to Dubai with her daughters without a male relative accompanying them. The PA's top religious official answered that she is not. She would have to be accompanied by a man from her family. Official PA TV host said this. The first question is that his wife wants to travel to Dubai with her daughters without the presence of an accompanying man from her family. Is this allowed? The Mufti Muhammad Hussein said, there has to be an accompanying man from the family on the trip. Oh, although the Palestinian Authority might be considered religiously moderate regarding women's rights compared to other Arab states, top PA religious leaders, including Mohammed Abbas, advisor on Islam, has been given time on official PA TV to tell Palestinian men that they are permitted, albeit with restrictions, to beat their wives, taught to obey their husbands, not to leave home without their permission, not to contact Israeli police if their husbands are violent, and even to not refuse their husband's demands for sex because it is a husband's right to enjoy his wife at any time, according to Abbas-appointed PA Mufti. Abbas's advisor, Muhammad Al-Habash, has explained on official PA TV that there are situations in which men are allowed to beat women, explaining that as long as Allah permitted a certain type of beating, it is for good. It is good for society and good for the woman and for the man. He added that it is okay for husbands, fathers, and brothers to beat disobedient women. Another of the PA's religious figures has defended what he presents as Islam's permission granted to husbands to hit their wives and threaten them, however, stressing that it should not be a serious beating that leaves marks. This goes on and says more detailed things. I want you to think about this. One of my new books, articles, is on that very topic. Are Muslims allowed to beat their wives? Are they allowed? Is it permissible? Some of these things just sound horrible. In this part in my new book, I sit there and sadly contemplate this evil. I look at the Islamic scriptures, and they endorse it. There is an actual woman on this past week who has endorsed it, and we'll probably come back to that as I'm going through the articles that I have prepared for today, but wow. Associated Press did an article today that surprised, not today, but on December 28th, they had me shocked. So on LinkedIn, I said, is the Associated Press waking up? I wrote, they wrote an article titled, each year, 1,000 Pakistani girls forcibly converted to Islam. This was by Kathy Gannon. He writes, out of Pakistan, Neha loved the hymns that filled her church with music, but she lost the chance to sing them last year when at the age of 14, she was forcibly converted from Christianity to Islam and married to a 45-year-old man with children twice her age. Okay, listen. She was enjoying singing hymns at her church. At the age of 14, someone grabbed her and forced her to marry a 45-year-old. She was forcibly converted. She didn't get a choice. Now, she tells her story in a voice so low, it occasionally fades away. She all but disappeared as she wraps a blue scarf tightly around her face and head. Neha's husband is in jail now, facing charges of rape for the underage marriage. But she is in hiding, afraid after security guards confiscated a pistol from his brother in court. Yes, they're going to try and kill her because she told the truth. He brought the gun to shoot me, said Neha, whose last name the Associated Press is not using for his safety. Neha is one of nearly 1,000 girls from religious minorities who are forced to convert to Islam in Pakistan each year, largely to pave the way for marriages that are under the legal age and non-consensual. Human rights activists say the practice has accelerated during lockdowns against the coronavirus when girls are out of school and more visible. Bride traffickers are more active on the internet and families are more in debt. U.S. State Department this month declared Pakistan a country of particular concern for violations of religious freedom, a designation for the Pakistani government rejects. The declaration was based in part on an appraisal by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom that underage girls in the minority Hindu, Christian, and Sikh communities were kidnapped and forced to convert to Islam, and then forcibly married and subject to rape. While most of the converted girls are impoverished Hindus from southern Sindh province, two new cases involving Christians, including Neha's, have roiled the country in the recent months. The girls generally are kidnapped by complicit acquaintances and relatives or men looking for brides. Sometimes they are taken by powerful landlords as payment for outstanding debts by their farmhand parents. And police often look the other way. Once converted, the girls are quickly married off, often to the older men, to their abductors, according to the Independent Human Rights Commission of Pakistan. Forced conversions thrive unchecked on a money-making web that involves Islamic clerics who salamize their marriages, magistrates who legalize the unions, and corrupt local police who aid the culprits by refusing to investigate or sabotage investigations, they said. Wow. Think about that. That's in Associated Press. They're finally admitted in the regular media that this is happening. Almost every week I have a story of this incredible, horrific crime perpetrated against women. Almost every week it is from Pakistan. Now this is part of what we would consider Islamic gender apartheid. The woman has no choice. The child, I mean, she's not a woman. She's 14 years old. And sometimes we're talking even younger, because remember, Aisha was married to Muhammad when she was 6 and bedded when she was 9. And this is okay. These actions are okay because Muhammad did those things under Islam. Yeah. Try and prove me wrong if you can. I'll tell you it's not going to be possible because it's there. It's documented. Some of this stuff is just so sick. You sit there wondering, how is that even possible? But that's the truth. And some of these things, you just sit there going, oh, how bad is it? It's bad. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention to all that's going on in the world, but I like to. And I recommend going to listen to some things at RAIR Foundation, R-A-I-R Foundation. You can do this by going to 3speak.online and looking up R-A-I-R Foundation. Now, I found articles by list on videos. These are usually great videos by a good amount of by news that are translated into subtitled things, which are really cool. One of these has Eric Zemmour and is talking about how Islamic terror is properly called jihad. It's interesting. I found this finally really exciting because you don't meet enough people who work in counterterrorism that consider Islamic terrorism jihad. And when we start to get to the point that that's considered, we can start addressing how to deal with it. Unfortunately, we don't see enough of that. So it's exciting to see someone do that on live TV, even if it's in France. I know they're a little slow, but yes. There was an article last week, again, a video off Rare Foundation and 3Speak.online. You may find this interesting because it's a video out of Canada where there's some kids playing hockey and the police come, this is in Calgary, to break up the outdoor hockey game. Two girls, policemen, two female policemen, actually tackle and fight with a young teenager. They tase him. And he's just like, "Why are you arresting me?" You want to know the reason they're arresting him? Because he was skating and he didn't have a mask on. Because he was having fun, they beat him, punch him, tase him, all in the name of stopping him from having fun. I hope they remove these women from the police force as being overly belligerent. But it's Canada. This would not fly here in general, but I don't know. Some of these things just make you go, why? Another one, Interpol and the UN did a joint operation capturing terrorism and arms dealers, netting 50 firearms, more than 6,000 rounds of ammunition, and over 40,000 sticks of dynamite, as well as 28 detonator cords. Now, this was in, again, West Africa and the Sahel. So you sit there and you hear these things, you look at it. And this is an article that came out December 21st. You can find it at news.un.org. I'm not a big fan of the UN. I wonder what really happened here just because I don't trust them. But again, Interpol was involved. I tend to give things more credence when a somewhat reputable organization takes part. But yeah. Last week, also, some bombing occurred in Somalia, a suicide bombing killing six, including military officials. This was, again, Somalia. Let me just read the article for you. This comes from scmp.com. And if I can get to the article, wow, the joy of being blocked because somebody wants to make things difficult. This is crazy. And I have no patience. So I will not be reading that article. They've decided to block it being used and read. Sad. They want you to give them your information, and I will not do that. Going on. Next article. This comes from Al Jameiner. Jewish groups, local politicians, voice fury over vicious anti-Semitic social media attacks on a French beauty queen. Why were they attacking her? Because she's Jewish. Oh, and she's 50% Jewish. One parent was Jewish. So Muslims have been saying all these nasty, vile things just because she is Jewish. And you sit there and you read some of these things, you're like, oh my gosh, it's just so offensive. And they're complaining because she's Jewish and they're saying things that are just horrible. How these things are possible, how they happen and they're allowed, it's kind of mind-numbing. And let's see, Israel Arab Alliance, Biden's greatest opportunity for a foreign policy triumph. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah, it will not happen. They're not going to have Israel give up. Here's an organization I wanted to talk about, and this came out today. Top U.S. Jewish group demands Palestinian Authority end the pay-to-slay terror support scheme. This is by the Al-Jamayner staff. A top American Jewish umbrella urged on Thursday, that's today, the Palestinian Authority to end its financial support of terrorists and their families. The statement by the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations followed a Palestinian media watch report that the PA planned to pay terrorists 3 months' salary in advance to circumvent a new Israeli law that was to come into effect on Thursday. Once again, we demand that the Palestinian Authority stop encouraging and incentivizing terror through its reprehensible pay-to-slay policies, rewarding acts of terror against Israelis by financially compensating perpetrators and their families with so-called martyr payments, the statement said. Palestinian leadership is going to extraordinary lengths to continue these payments, insisting on paying convicted terrorists a three-month lump sum salary before the end of the year. The pay-to-slay scheme is an unconscionable insult to the memory of the many innocent victims of Palestinian terrorism from Israel, America, and around the world today. The international community must recognize this as a barbaric and unacceptable practice that incentivizes terror and bloodshed. More countries are cutting aid to the PA to protest this abhorrent practice. The Palestinian Media Authority must discontinue these immoral payments immediately by abolishing its martyrs fund. Global attention must be drawn to the fact that this policy exists and persists, and we urge all who respect the dignity of human life to condemn it unequivocally, the Conference of Presidents implored. Standing article by Al-Jamayner. And going on. Was a quiet night here. I know it's December 31st, but I just was 2 weeks in a row was too much for me to be quiet. So going on, next article. There's a famous athlete in Pakistan who is he plays cricket, I believe. Shabi Akhtar has been describing his dream of Islamic supremacy, of the capture of Kashmir. Now, if you understand anything about Islamic and Hindu fights that occur in respect to Kashmir, it's been going on for a very, very long time. And the sad thing is this man is trying to incentivize another, I hope people stand up against him and try to stop him from his evil. This next article is about Germany. A city of Kyle posted flags of an Islamic Syria terror group, FSA, on official messages for Muslims migrants. This comes from medforth.blog. Municipality of the German city of Kyle posts the flag of Islamic Syrian terror group FSA in official messages for Arab-speaking migrants. And here we go. Imagine that Islamist supporters of terrorists put pressure on the city of Kyle to delete the official flag of Syria, and then the latter follows suit and publishes the terror flag without any research. But they have made the calculation without the honorable secular Syrians who have now exerted pressure and have told the city of Kyle, which is the official national flag that is accepted everywhere. Madness! Yes. Take a look at some of these things, and this is done. This is posted. When I looked at this picture, I kind of sat there mind-blown. I mean, it's... You don't have to be a social studies teacher to catch these things. You don't have to be a genius. I mean, these are simple things you can verify with a quick search online. But no. Yeah. Some of these things they go, why? Last week, Sweden admitted that its welfare system had paid 45 ISIS jihadis. So there's an article on terrorist financing there by Sputnik News. And we've been reading about that over and over for the past few weeks. Last week, France arrested 4 Muslim migrants from Pakistan that were involved in the Charlie Hebdo attack earlier in the year. So there's another article that I didn't get to share last week. Germany carried out a secret operation bringing ISIS women and their children home. I don't know if you saw that last week. It's a shocker. This came from Bild, BILD.DE. Federal government is bringing German ISIS women back from northern Syria. Now, they're doing this secretively. This article came out December 19th. For the first time, the federal government itself taken action, bringing captured German ISIS members from northern Syria back to Germany. The Federal Foreign Office has chartered a plane for the long-planned return transport of three women and their children and several orphans. I want you to think about that. Are they going to have to supervise these people? How many people are they currently watching? Can they watch more, is what it comes down to. And that's even scarier when you start to evaluate things from an expense list. Can you afford to watch this many people? Can you expect? Are you watching more than you can do, take care of now? Why bring more in? I mean, this is just incredible. I just sit there and I'm amazed when I hear these things. How can they not be responsible? How can they not be watching and taking care of things? There's a lot of important things out there. We're not taking care of and watching them. The amount of people that are coming in to the United States or the amount of people coming into France. You know, we don't have enough people to vet here in the United States. And there are hundreds of thousands coming into Europe. Why do I say it like that? It sounds like an incredible number. Well, that's what it is, people. These people are just coming without permission. My thoughts are you turn them around immediately. They're coming without passports. They're coming without proof of who they are. I don't care if they want to tell you who they are or not. You don't leave them on your shore. You pick them up. You drop them off someplace. I don't care where. This sounds mean. I'm saying don't drop them on our shores. They didn't come here. But if they have any indication that they came from Syria, drop them off in Syria. Where was their last stop? Oh, if they came from France, take them straight back. Drop them there. Wherever they were last, you drop them off. It's their problem, not yours. You don't need to keep this going. This is some of the sadness that's going on. And it's being permitted. Why are countries not protecting their borders? Here's another one. CIA officer. Betrayal by Muslim agent led to jihad suicide bombing in which seven were killed. This comes from CBS News. In the episode of Intelligence Matters, host Michael Morrell interviews Mark Polymeropoulos, a former senior CIA intelligence officer who had served a 26-year career in public service. He looks back at the day when seven service members were killed by a suicide bomber, Humam al-Balawi, who was working as a double agent. This officer, CIA case officer, talks about why it was important to interview al-Balawi in person, the mistakes that were made, and what important lesson he still keeps with him. The article talks about why the CIA had to interview him. For us, a personal meeting with an asset that cannot be replicated, he said. You can have communications over a kind of computer, email, other impersonal means, but ultimately, with someone of this importance, you need CIA case officer and operations officer to really look into the asset and get the eye-to-eye real assessment of what they're dealing with. So, again, this guy was a double agent that they're talking about, and he was responsible for the deaths of many. Some of these things you sit there and go, you know, what is the stupidity? How did they not see this happening? When you don't understand what Islam is really about, what it really teaches, it makes that extremely possible. You wish it wasn't true. I mean, even today, there's a Hindu temple that was destroyed in Pakistan with Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar in the background. In Spain, there was a Muslim migrant screaming on Christmas Day, Allahu Akbar, I'm going to kill you at passersby. I mean, just people just walking by. I saw this one, I believe, on Christmas Day. This article came out December 28th. Police investigate a Christmas Day street event as jihadism. Let me just read this one. This comes from El País. That's ELPAIS.com, Alpais. Two agents arrested an individual in Castellon who, armed with a machete, shouted, "Allahu Akbar, I'm going to kill you." The national police are investigating a frustrated jihadi attack, a street event that occurred this past Christmas in Castellon, in which a Moroccan citizen who was detained, who armed with a machete and shouting, "Allahu Akbar, I'm going to kill you," he threatened the people passing by the street. Detainee had been identified as Muhammad, 45 years old, and cousin of Muhammad Q, a jihadi who resided in Castellon before moving to Syria to fight in the ranks of the Islamic State. Now, think about that. He went back to Spain, and he's trying to kill more people. Isn't this a reason to be concerned? Or should you be concerned you're taking the women back who are these people's wives? No, nothing to see here. They don't want you to realize how dangerous this is. Yemen, Iran-backed Houthis blamed his 22 were killed in an attack on a new government. This is from Jihad Watch. You can find with Christine Douglas Williams wrote the article. There's a lot here today, a lot of news. I think it's important that we talk about some of these things and we do what we can to get the truth out. I'm going to end early because it doesn't seem to be anybody in today. I'm just going to hope that somebody out there listened. I ask that you pay attention, watch your surroundings, stand against tyranny everywhere. Get the truth out. That's the biggest thing I can ask of you. Get the truth out. And thank you for listening. And I'm just going to say goodbye and say, it's time for us to fight. It's time for us to fight back. How are we going to do this? Getting the news out. That's the number one thing. And not accepting lies. Here we go.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole